Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. My name is Davis Manick. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Manick. I am joined today by Colin Drew. We had been doing a series of drafts on Underdog Fantasy in their Best Ball Mania contest, but the season is here, less than a week away, so we are going to take time in today's show to really dig into some DFS strategy for everyone who is listening and watching right now. Colin, the season, it's here. We are ready. We are a week away from entering DFS contests for real money.
I know, man. It's crazy. I don't know if it's the lack of preseason games, preseason DFS contests to sweat, less reporters, I guess, at some of the camps and things like that, but it feels surreal. It really doesn't feel like the season is going to be starting next week, but I know once next week rolls around, it's just going to be a buzzsaw. So it's good to take a little bit of time this week to try to, you know, next week we'll be talking a lot about week one and thinking a lot about week one. It's a good time to set some macro strategy, try to figure out what our approach is going to be this year. So I'm excited for that. And I know we've also got a big showdown strategy podcast that we're going to drop this week as well. So a lot of good stuff going on.
So, you know, I think from the very top level, I think we should talk a little bit about the tools on dailyroto.com and how people can leverage those projections. You know, obviously a little bit of contest and game selection that we can talk a little bit later. But I think, you know, we should start with the Daily Roto Optimizer and projections and using those to create winning NFL daily fantasy lineups.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys do want access to Daily Roto, you can drop the promo code NFL20 to save 10% off your subscription. And we've got a lot of stuff this year for people who've been subscribers in the past. We've got some new stuff that we've added too, all of which should make us kind of a better DFS player. The kind of foundation of everything is with the customizable projections in the optimizer, though. And I think that is something that's really important to make the projections your own. So you're not necessarily just using our projections. We put a lot of time and effort into individual market shares for all of the teams and all of the players, but especially early in the season, there's going to be some things that are unknown. And our projections allow you to tweak inputs like the market share of rush attempts, market share of targets, team totals, game totals. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns heading into this season. There's not going to be fans at most of these stadiums throughout the whole season. And so, you know, is the home field advantage going to be the same as it normally is, or is that going to be something that changes this year? And so our projection framework is a really solid, mathematically oriented way to power the optimizer. And obviously the optimizer itself has a lot of custom features and flexibility too.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that savvy daily fantasy players and season-long fantasy players as well are going to be adjusting to on the fly is going to be adjusting to home field advantage or lack thereof. You know, one of the things that the researchers in scorecasting found was that home field advantage is actually really linked to refereeing decisions where, you know, basically that home field teams are just much more likely to get refereeing decisions go in their favor. I saw that Ed Fang, who you can find him on Twitter at the Power Rank, found that over the last five seasons in the NFL, home field advantage was worth about 1.5 points, you know, sometimes a little bit more on a given year, sometimes a little bit less, but right in around 1.5 points. My guess is that actually we see that stay pretty consistent, and this is likely only true for football. I don't think this is going to be true for baseball or anything like that because of the time zone switches and, you know, practice times and schedules and everything. I think that those home field advantages are still really likely to be true in the NFL, probably not for other sports, though.
Yeah, and I think the other kind of clear thing where you are losing a bit of an advantage is you think about just the two-minute drill at the end of half, end of a game, and you got the quarterback, they're pointing to their helmet, they can't hear anything, they can't get the play call in, they're calling an audible, and so all of that stuff is going to be totally gone. And for some stadiums, it's a pretty loud and powerful thing. And so you would expect in some of these two-minute drill type situations that road teams will be able to execute a bit more smoothly. less, you know, miscommunication with the coaches. And so I think some of that will help, obviously, as well. And it may be not something that you can quantify, but I do think that you'll see a little bit of an impact there. Some of the other stuff that I'm excited about this year, I think the integration of the floor and ceiling projections in the DR optimizer is something that sets us apart from the competition. Being able to directly run things on ceiling projections is really important for tournaments, and it gives you kind of the power to do that, as well as utilize like volatility and shuffle to get player diversity. And then one of the new things we're adding this year is we're actually doing our own ownership projections for the first time this year instead of using a partner. And so those will be ours based on a lot of the modeling work that Andrew Barron has done. We're going to have those for main slates on both sites. We're also going to have those for showdowns on both sites. And I believe we're going to set it up in a way that we can actually have ownership projections for some of the smaller slates as well. And so if you're trying to grind a lot of different slates, then I think that we'll have a really good toolkit for you guys to use on top of all the content that the team's going to be doing.
Yeah, I think that we will definitely cover this over our next couple segments. But, you know, really one of the most important things for Daily Fantasy in 2020 is just paying attention to what the field is doing. And really the simplest way to explain this as it pertains to Daily Fantasy sports is we can all feel confident in our projections, right? But we are still trying to predict the future. We're trying to figure out which way, you know, an oblong leather ball is going to bounce, you know, and it is not a very predictable game. Obviously, we see this happen in baseball all the time, but just random things are going to happen in a football game. And when you get too confident in a given outcome, you know, you give the field, you give your opponents just a lot of different ways to get leverage over your lineup. So I think the fact that we are doing, you know, roster ship percentage projections for showdown is going to be big. I think paying attention to those roster percentage projections in the main slate is also going to be, you know, massively important, even in single entry and 3-max. I think one of the things that we should be trying to do most often is generate lineups that have a great amount of leverage as opposed to a great amount of projected points. Start out our discussion for Daily Fantasy I actually think this is one of the most misunderstood topics in all of Daily Fantasy, you know, any Daily Fantasy sport, and it is quarterbacks that are massive favorites, right? So when we see quarterbacks that are favored by 8, 9, 10 points, we actually see them oftentimes come in at a lower roster projection or an actual roster amount lower than their projection, because so many people are saying, well, why do I want a quarterback who is just going to spend the entire second half running the ball? And, you know, game script obviously is going to be really important to the ways that we do our projections. But year over year, the thing that we find that correlates the best to fantasy points, it's not spread, but it is team total. And obviously those teams that are, you know, massive favorites, they're going to have giant team totals.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And I think sometimes people overestimate the way that they might get there. And you think about, even if it's like a 13-point spread or something like that, a total mismatch, you think about the way that they're going to get there, and you're assuming that they're going to jump out and dominate the entire game. And that definitely doesn't always happen. A lot of times they're not putting teams away until pretty late in the fourth quarter. And then there are cases where the underdogs are actually able to keep it competitive throughout the entire game. They don't necessarily cover the spread. And so in that case, like, those games are 10-point games anyways, and you're going to get a lot of fantasy utility out of the entire game for that. So I definitely think that it is one of the things we've seen really high correlation between team totals and quarterback performances. In general, we've seen the field is actually pretty decent at identifying top value quarterbacks on a week-to-week basis, more so than they are at, like, the wide receiver and tight end positions. But I do think that it is important, and you definitely don't want to – I mean, it sounds crazy, but you definitely don't want to shy away from a quarterback just because they're a 10-point favorite.
Yeah, I mean, those situations, I think Russell Wilson, a great example of this, where, yes, I mean, sometimes it does absolutely burn you when the Seahawks are big favorites, right? I remember the Arizona Cardinals at Seattle Seahawks game last year. The Seahawks had a pick six on the Cardinals' first offensive drive, and Russ threw like 22 passes in that entire game and was, you know, just a massive bust for that week. But then in the other Arizona Cardinals game, Arizona hung with them. It was a really low-owned Russ spot, and he had, I think, like 38 DraftKings points, threw two touchdowns to DK Metcalf, like, and he ended up being very under-owned in that spot because of the large spread.
Yeah, and I think also just you think about that offense in general, that's somewhat a nature of the spread and the mismatch of the game, but also just the nature of the offense and an offense in Seattle that is highly efficient, that generally will run a bit fewer plays. And so I think, you know, in those games where the efficiency is there, but they score on the ground, then you definitely suck some of the life out of it. But the ceiling is definitely really high in those spots. And so you're not really looking to avoid that. And I would say in general, I think quarterback, I mean, the public roster percentage is important in every position, but quarterback seems to be the position where the field is generally identifying slightly better plays. And so it's looking more at like the wide receiver position, I think, for differentiation is kind of how the analysis that I've done has showed like the biggest edge can be.
And, you know, I mean, obviously one of the things that you can do to create unique and leverage lineups, if you are, you know, let's say you have Patrick Mahomes, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, you know, just one of these very, very chalky quarterbacks. One of the things you can do to create unique rosters is utilize the bring back, which we will talk about a little bit later in the show when we get into stacking. Another of the things that tends to come up, you know, four or five times throughout the year is the dreaded injury replacement running back. Sometimes it works out fantastically. Latavius Murray back-to-back 30-plus fantasy point games with Alvin Kamara out. But the list of poison chalice running backs last year, a very long list. I mean, we had Jalen Samuels come in with less than 10 DraftKings points. We had Benny Snell have rough performances. Malcolm Brown, probably the most owned performance, filling in for Todd Gurley, got injured. I think he had 3 DraftKings points against San Francisco. What are some of the ways that you evaluate just these ultra, ultra chalky injury replacement running backs?
Yeah, I think the talking point used to just always be play the running back chalk, and there wasn't a lot of kind of like rigorous analysis that went into that and really thought about like what the range of outcomes for those players is. And I think with the tools that we have this year, we're going to be in a much better position to do that. And these were some stuff that Mike Leone had built last year as far as simulating the slates and identifying what the odds are that a player is going to finish as the top running back at a position, the top value at a position. We will have those simulations back. Andrew Barron has kind of updated those, been able to automate those. We'll have an article each week that breaks it down for the main slate, but we'll also have a simulations tool that you're able to dive into on your own to kind of compare that. And I think really that's a next level thing that we're looking for is you're really looking for what is the odds that this guy is going to produce a high enough score that he's going to be on a winning tournament lineup. And how does that kind of compare to where the field is taking a stance on him? And so a lot of times you are going to find the salary relief is so cheap that even if they're 30% rostered by the field, there still is value in taking them. But that's not necessarily always going to be the case. And so we will have a little bit of a framework to be able to kind of make those decisions on a week-to-week basis. The running back, as far as like the field, I would say is efficient at picking running backs. Generally, higher owned running backs do perform better compared to their salary-based expectations, but it's not to the same degree as the quarterback position. Quarterback kind of being the most predictive, running back being kind of the second most, then you have the volatility of like the wide receiver tight end positions. So I think it all depends on the overall roster and what you're thinking that week. If you're pivoting at a lot of the wide receiver or stack positions, then maybe playing those value running backs is still totally fine, but you definitely don't want to just construct something that across the board is all the most popular plays, unless you're looking at like a cash game or, you know, like a 10-man league type system.
Yeah, and I think the largest part of evaluating fill-in running backs is you just have to ask, especially on DraftKings. On FanDuel, you're kind of weighted more towards touchdowns.
Yeah.
But on DraftKings, you know, a great example last year, Brian Hill. Brian Hill was a fill-in running back for Devonta Freeman. When he missed, he ended up losing goal line work to Quadri Olison, though he did hold on to some of the third down work. In the case of Malcolm Brown, he lost the third down work to Daryl Henderson, and that ended up being a massive problem. Ty Johnson lost third down work to J.D. McKissic, and obviously these are, you can substitute these names with whoever you like in 2020, right? When Josh Jacobs misses, Theo Riddick might play the passing downs, even if Lynn Bowden Jr. is the primary first and second down running back, and the more likely it is that your injury replacement running back is going to hang on to that passing down work, I think you can get super aggressive with those guys, maybe even lock buttoning them in an MME run.
Yeah, and a lot of that is going to depend how concrete the news is. And at the end of the day, projection providers are forced to make a decision. They're forced to put a projection on somebody as far as how the work is going to be divvied up. But on a week-to-week basis, there are varying levels of confidence that kind of go into that. And sometimes, like you said, you know that this is a concrete thing where this is the role and this is how it's going to break down. Maybe it's happened in previous seasons. We've seen utilization with the same personnel. And then there's going to be cases where it hasn't happened before. You know, this running back's never went down. They don't have the same personnel behind them from their last injuries. The players they do have haven't seen snaps and spotlight starts, or maybe one of them wasn't active. And so all of that stuff is stuff that you can take into consideration. Whenever I'm certain about a situation, I kind of had the lower volatility score in the optimizer. And when it's something that's a little more variant, I kind of will crank it up a little bit to account for some of that risk, maybe reduce the projections if I think that two guys might be in more of a timeshare, but crank up the volatility on each of those guys. And I think those are all important decisions that you're making on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I think the volatility and shuffle features in the Daily Roto Optimizer do a great job of, you know, eliminating some clumping problems so that your 150th lineup, you know, is not terrible relative to your first, and also, you know, really nailing in on the type of projections you want. You know, wide receiver 3, CeeDee Lamb should have a much higher volatility than Tony Pollard, were Tony Pollard to be the, you know, the injury replacement for Ezekiel Elliott. On from a very high level, can you just kind of get into what stacking is and why it's so important?
Yeah, so stacking is essentially playing players together that have correlated outcomes. And that means that when one player succeeds, it's going to dictate what happens with the rest of your roster. The obvious simple example of this is stacking a quarterback with a wide receiver or tight end from their team, and knowing that when the quarterback throws a touchdown to that player, they're both moving up the leaderboard. That the reason that stacking is important isn't because it's the thing that's going to produce the perfect lineup the most often, but it increases the chances that you produce a very strong 90th percentile performance. When one player succeeds, it impacts the rest of your lineup. And there's a lot of different levels of stacking that we should get into, including kind of what types of quarterbacks we want to stack with single stacks versus double stacks. The game stacking is something that's very important, but you are seeking this correlation. And I think almost counterintuitively, people think about correlation mattering less in smaller fields. And I actually think it matters more. I think that some correlation can be really advantageous in single entry and three max, where a lot of people are putting cash game lineups into those contests. And you're not needing a perfect lineup in those contests to win. And so the correlation matters a lot. And kind of double stacking and game stacking and three max and single entry is a really good way to profit over the course of the NFL DFS season.
Yeah, so I think that is a really interesting conversation to have about why single entry and three max stacking is so good. And, you know, kind of the easiest way to explain it is, if you're going to win the Millionaire Maker, if you're going to beat, you know, 200,000 other people, you probably have almost the best play at every single position. You probably got, you know, about, I know that our buddy Adam Levitan has written that the average roster spot on a Millie-making winning team has contributed about 25 DraftKings points. So that means, you know, probably you had the best tight end of the day. You probably had an insanely good defensive special teams performance. Like, you hit the nuts, right? You really had just all of these amazingly perfect outcomes. But you don't have to score the amazingly perfect outcome to win the $15 single entry or the $333 single entry on FanDuel and DraftKings. You know, it really is a lot more simple than that. And, you know, kind of the way I've been thinking of it is, it's much easier to access like 80th percentile outcomes than it is to access 99.999 percentile outcomes. And stacking is way better for that 80th percentile.
Definitely. And on some weeks, there will be someone that's sub 5% that goes off for 40 points. And in those lotteries, you're definitely just stone dead without that player. That's not always going to be the case in the smaller field stuff. And I think even in a format like leagues, like 10-man contests where people are playing cash lineups, swapping out like one of those wide receiver positions to get some correlation without sacrificing value is something that would be really advantageous. And in general, like, stacking gets talked about all the time in content. You probably think that you're stacking, but my guess is you're still not stacking enough. You're still not doing it aggressively enough. And it's okay to take the zeros on weeks where your entire lineup fails if the weeks that you do hit, it pays you off more. And like specific metrics on game stacks, we'll kind of get into those. But especially as you target high team total games, there are a lot of players that, you know, succeed in those games. And that doesn't even mean the game has to shoot out entirely. Just if it comes close to the total, it can produce so much fantasy goodness that you really want to get that exposure.
So I think that a great place to start with is what do you mean by people are not being aggressive enough about their stacking, because I assume many people listening and watching this are probably the people that are not being aggressive enough with the stacking.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that, kind of dating back to last year, was that if you compare what percentage of the field is using certain stack types and what percentage of those lineups finish in the top 0.1%, which you really need to be to contend, especially in the Millionaire Maker lotteries, there's a huge discrepancy between lineups that finish in the top 0.1% and the number of users that are actually using those lineups. So it just is a one raw example, which you can find in our stacking guide, but the QB wide receiver stack was in the top 0.1%, 8.2% of the time, but the field was only using it 4.1% of the time. So it was clearly an advantageous strategy that a lot of sharp users are using, but the field in general still isn't there enough. And I think a lot of times it feels uncomfortable, especially when you start to get into like bring back stacks, to sacrifice value. But the reason that you're doing that is to increase the odds that kind of all the pieces of your lineup hit at once.
Yeah, because if you think about how an NFL game goes, it's actually one of the games where the opposing team can control the other team's play calling. You know, if the Dallas Cowboys are up 14 points at the end of the first quarter on the New York Giants, the Giants are going to have to run the ball less. They are going to have to throw the ball much more. Therefore, Dak Prescott stacked with Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, then with Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard in that lineup as well, you are actually causing your lineup to be projected by more points, because obviously if you went into your optimizing tool and you gave the Giants a 75-25 pass to run ratio, your Giants pass catchers would be projected for way, way, way more points.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the metrics in the stacking guide I looked at last year with games where the total was 50 or more points, and then what percent of players in those games or what percentage of those games were able to deliver players that multiple players hit 20 plus fantasy points on DraftKings. And I know Adam's article called out a higher number for the Million Maker winner, but I think think about 20 points as far as some of these tournaments and needing a player to be able to get that. And so games with totals of 50 or more, 63% of them had at least three players that were producing above that level. And 37% of those had four players, 11% of them had five players even. And so you think about stacks, like those are really high numbers. And if you were just going to blindly stack, you know, five men from team totals of 50 plus and have that as like a generic rule throughout the course of the season, my guess is you would end up being fairly successful as long as you were filling in with decent value players and projections at other positions, just because the success rate is so high. And I think the other thing is the floor is a lot higher than you think when you do that too, because you're stacking good game environments. And even if you've got five players in there, like chances are, like we said, like three of them are definitely going to hit. And there's a pretty reasonable chance that all five will hit too.
So, I think that we also need to tackle the idea of, like, is this going to become much more popular in 2020? You know, obviously one of the things that we know is the field gets better every year at DFS, right? The edges become smaller. People are tend to, you know, approach things from a more game theory optimal perspective. You know, kind of what is your estimation on what percentage of the field does this? And if a greater percentage of the field does this, does that mean that the strategy doesn't change, but the games that we are targeting week over week need to change?
Yeah, I don't really have an estimate for how the field will change this year. I think it changes a little bit every year, generally, as more content's out there and more talking points are out there. You know, people start to adjust a little bit. And I would say as you get into like higher stakes stuff, I think that those people are for sure kind of thinking through all these different situations. But especially in like lower stake stuff and single entry three max stuff, I don't really think you need to be trying to like galaxy brain yourself and pivot off of stacking as a really viable strategy.
Yeah. So I think that one thing that people need to do a little bit better at is, first off, you know, not leaving themselves out. So I think that one thing that people do is they might run a subset with bringbacks, right? So maybe if they do 150 lineups, maybe 70 of those lineups, 75 of those lineups will be bringback lineups. But I think that kind of if you are going to be doing the 150 thing, I do think that you need to be doing 150 lineups, every quarterback double stacked with at least one bring back. And one of the things that I've noticed about the bring back is that gets you access to all sorts of dudes who are really, really low owned. Like you find yourself with like 3% owned guys who you have for, you know, 18 fantasy points or whatever. Like that is one of the ways to generate super unique lineups I have found.
Yeah, I think that the double stack is like a solid foundation. I do think it varies by quarterback, and I do want to get a little bit into the quarterback kind of archetypes. And if you're a rushing quarterback versus a hybrid quarterback versus a pocket passer, how you would kind of think about stacking those players. And then one of the other things, if you don't want to force the bring back in like all of your lineups, the Daily Roto Optimizer actually lets you use boosts so that you could draw the correlation in a smart way that way. And you could basically say that whenever I'm using a quarterback from this team, boost the opposing wide receivers projections by 15%. That way, if the guys on the other team are extremely bad values, you're not going to get quite as much as them. But in the games where it's competitive and players are kind of close together in values, it's always going to prioritize the stacked guy. And I think that's kind of the smartest way to go about building in the correlation. But if you can't do that, then I do think that I would try to advocate for stacking as much as you can with the double stacks and the bring back.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, one of the problems and one of the things that you have to try and solve for on a weekly basis too is, you know, let's say you're stacking Matt Ryan, and so, you know, oftentimes you're double stacking him with Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst. Is there are some ways that you need to try and build it in so that you are also getting Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley as one-offs as well, because obviously you want to have some Julio Jones away from Matt Ryan, you know, and that is again, you know, one of the challenges of you know, of building in an optimizer, not building by hand.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when I think about three max lineups, I usually build with an optimizer but hand edit just to make sure that I'm kind of comfortable with everything there, and then use the optimizer for like 150 max. And like you said, the stackability of different offenses matters a lot too. And so there could be an offense that kind of projects worse on the whole, but they've been a highly more stackable offense. And I think targeting some of those offenses is an important way to go, as well as trying to figure out ways that within a stack, you can also kind of differentiate and get contrarian with, while still having exposure to like the chalkiest like quarterback of the week or whatever.
Week one, FanDuel DFS. It's here. The slates are here. The salaries are here. We are ready to go. We've ran the Daily Roto Optimizer. We kind of have a sense of what direction that is going to send us in. Colin, how are we doing, buddy?
We're doing good. If you guys want to check out the Optimizer, it's actually free up right now through basically the beginning of next week. So we'll be going back behind the paywall on Monday of week one of the NFL season. But if you want to test it out, if you never used it before, if you want to test building lineups, you can definitely go through and do that as well. And so the rosters aren't finalized for these teams. We're still getting news out of the camps, and then there will be cuts. And so the projections will change before week one, obviously. But I do think we're in a decent place to at least take a first look at some of the salaries at the positional level. And we do lose some good quarterbacks, obviously. Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson on that opening showdown slate, they're off the slate. Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Sunday night or Monday night, they're off the slate. So I mean, it's Lamar at quarterback, and then there's a massive gap. I do think that it's pretty easy to fit in Lamar this week, just because there is some value that opens up with injuries that happen in preseason and kind of guys moving up and down the depth charts. So I think it's going to be pretty easy to fit in Lamar, but he's definitely the clear quarterback one. And then there's kind of a massive gap between a jammed group of guys that both have upside, but also some kind of like questions and concerns.
Yeah. I actually am very glad to be starting the year without a Patrick Mahomes slate. You know, I think that my natural homerism for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs gets the best of me. Really, to make optimals, Mahomes does have to have like 400 yards and 5 touchdowns, because he's always so freaking expensive. So it is nice to be leaving myself that out right away. And you know, Lamar Jackson is much more expensive than every other quarterback on the slate. But, Colin, we have him projected 6 points better than every other slate, or than every other quarterback on the opening day slate. And I got to say, I think it's pretty legit. I think that you really can't argue the fact that he is, you know, that much better than everyone else.
Yeah, and especially just the way that the slate shook out. I mean, the Ravens do have one of the highest team totals on the slate, and I think that Lamar is going to be like a foundation point, especially for cash game lineups during week one. This type of price tag on him wouldn't be as sustainable in other weeks where the pricing gets a little bit more efficient, but I think it's there for week one. Some of the questions I have as we move down I think two of the, you know, one of the most popular games to target a game stack for would be that Tampa Bay New Orleans game. You have Tom Brady coming in, really highly correlated offense in Tampa Bay with last year it was, at least with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. You don't know how that offense will change with Brady there, but you know that you're getting a good game environment in the Superdome. You know you're getting a high game total there. And then Breeze is obviously on the other side, is able to open it up as well with Michael Thomas. So those were some of the guys that I think kind of jump out as like the tournament options. Two of the guys that I think project really well but have some more question marks and wanted to get your input on was both Cam Newton and Carson Wentz, who actually are inside the top five quarterbacks during week one.
So I don't have any concerns about Carson Wentz. I think, you know, he right now he's dealing with like a small injury while he's at training camp, but I think the matchup is great. You know, I think that he has a little bit of ability to run. We've actually seen him put up fine fantasy numbers in very similar situations where his wide receivers are dropping off left and right. Right now, Cam Newton is being projected like fully healthy Cam Newton, like a Cam Newton who is capable of running, a Cam Newton who is going to complete, you know, roughly 58 to 62% of his passes against and now remember, also the Miami defense, they were historically one of the worst secondaries ever in NFL history last year. Our algorithm is feeding in a lot of that information. Theoretically, they should be better this year. It's not really reflected in the line. You know, New England is a massive favorite at home against Miami. My sense is that probably you should not run Cam Newton at just what the optimizer is giving you because of all these questions. We have Cam Newton health questions, you know, a lot of this different stuff. But, you know, really outside of Lamar and Russell Wilson, I don't see a quarterback with more upside than him in this slate.
Yeah. And it's pretty interesting. And I think between that and the fact that the Patriots aren't a very stackable offense, I do think it would lead people away from him in tournaments. And so I think because of that, it's going to be pretty appealing for tournaments. I don't think if I was playing cash games, I think even despite the price savings, it would be tough to get comfortable with what that offense is going to look like. They've even talked about the possibility of using like a platoon at times, which seems a little crazy, but I know Cam's been getting the majority of the first team reps. He's definitely going to be the starter. The other thing is on FanDuel, touchdowns matter quite a bit. And Cam is projected for 23% of the rushing touchdowns for the Patriots. The Patriots are going to have a lot of competition for goal line carries. I mean, you've got James White with the passing game. You've got Cam now on the goal line. You've got Sonny Michel, Damien Harris playing more, Rex Burkhead getting a role in the preseason. And so you could end up with a situation where it's not a clear thing, and Cam doesn't get as much goal line work as he had in the past. And so I think that's one of the things that is just like a risk or uncertainty about Cam's specific projection.
Yeah. You know, I think that kind of just looking at projections, I think that our stuff might be a little, just a tiny bit low on Russell Wilson, and that he might get a little bit of a manual bump for me, especially because I love to pair him with DK Metcalf, who is only 6,400 in the opening week on FanDuel. And I gotta say, there's a pretty much a perfect marriage between DK Metcalf and FanDuel scoring system, where it's only half point PPR and you really get rewarded for touchdowns.
Yeah, definitely. We kind of glossed over one of the other reasons that I think Lamar Jackson will be popular is just like Hollywood Brown is 5,900 on FanDuel during week one. And so fitting in the Lamar stack is not a very hard thing to do. Moving to the running back position, you know, what the biggest question, I guess, is just what's going to happen with Alvin Kamara, because
yeah,
we've got him as the second highest projected running back on the slate. I think all of that makes sense, but there's a chance Latavius Murray just steps into that whole workload. You talked earlier in the show about what Latavius did when he filled in for Kamara last year. And so that is just another value place that's going to change the slate entirely if it does open up.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that you would just kind of lock button Latavius Murray in that situation. Yeah. I mean, you would just play him in. You would just play him in every lineup. You know, I think for FanDuel specifically, something that we might see is Austin Eckler getting underowned because he is, you know, a receiving back. People don't think of him as a touchdown scorer, but actually, you know, Eckler's huge games last year were very driven by touchdown scoring. It is an advantageous matchup against the Cincinnati Bengals. My guess is that at 7,700, you know, we see Gurley, we see Aaron Jones, we see Joe Mixon, you know, all on way more rosters than we see Austin Eckler. So I am liking early on Austin Eckler as a leverage play on FanDuel.
two other running back situations I want to get your thoughts on. The first one in Detroit seems likely that DeAndre Swift may not be ready for the opener. He's a rookie that I know both of us were high on in best ball drafts, but rookies in general build more progressively as the season goes on. And then the injury in camp could impact the week one role, whether or not he's even active or how involved he is in the game plan. Kerryon Johnson is $5,600 on FanDuel. And so the matchup with Chicago is not the best, not the worst. It's definitely a matchup where if he's getting goal line work, the Lions should be able to score points. He's the best value on the slate, I think, it right now at the running back position if we don't get Latavius Murray at $5,100.
Yeah, I mean, so right now in our stuff, we are, I am projecting DeAndre Swift out. I do not think that he is likely to play in week one. I am giving Bo Scarborough a little bit of work, but you know, again, there is a possibility that Bo Scarborough, who has also not been at practice, doesn't play. So if their backfield really is Kerryon Johnson, Ty Johnson, and the fullback Nick Bowden, that's probably going to impact Kerryon Johnson's projection, probably going to give him another point or so. My guess is he's going to start hitting optimals at that rate and is going to be kind of a building block level play.
Yeah, and then the other guy that would kind of be in that conversation in that game in the Superdome would be Ronald Jones, whose price is $5,700. A lot of questions in the Tampa backfield, but from all reports, Vaughn hasn't had the best training camp, so even if he matters later in the season, unlikely to be in week one. And so you've got Ronald Jones, Peyton Barber's gone. They've got LeSean McCoy, who was not active for the Super Bowl, and so I think Ronald Jones would kind of be in that secondary mix, but we've got to talk about the Todd Gurley-sized elephant in the room at the running back position for week one.
Look, I mean, I am using kind of his seasonal baselines for our projection right now. And when Todd Gurley is healthy, I think that the Falcons plan on using him like they used Devonta Freeman, like they used Tevin Coleman before him, like they used Steven Jackson before him. Like this team, this coaching staff, they pretty much do just use the top guy and then they mix in, you know, when Freeman started to falter and Coleman was coming on, they intertwined those guys. I don't think that their plan is to do that that much right now. So I think we kind of need to be in on Todd Gurley at this price while he's healthy, as disgusting as that sounds.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. It's going to be a challenge. It's definitely going to test your kind of trust of the projections and your mental willpower to click Todd Gurley into the lineups. But I definitely think that there is upside there, especially while he's healthy. At the wide receiver position, I think there's some really good values, especially under $7,000 on FanDuel. Terry McLaurin, if you're getting in those Eagles game stacks at all, his cost is just $6,500. Calvin Ridley, if you do project an increased role for him this year, he's $6,600 on FanDuel. Marquise Brown is $5,900. Those guys were the guys that jumped out to me as kind of either one-off plays or complements in game stacks that have a lot of upside at really cheap prices.
Yeah, I mean, what do you... So I actually think Hollywood Brown here is a great inflection point for us. He is priced at $5,900 at FanDuel.com. And, you know, pretty much the entire fantasy football playing world fell in love with Marquise Brown this offseason. He gained 15 pounds of muscle, played with a screw in his foot last year. I mean, I would expect him to be the most rostered wide receiver by quite a bit. What do we do with Hollywood Brown in these large field tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to wait till I see the simulations for him, but I would agree with the take just that the public roster percentage should be the highest of any individual wide receiver. Lamar was actually pretty interesting as a stack last year, just because obviously he had tons of individual games where he was hitting his ceiling, like 14 games above 20 plus fantasy points, but it was pretty hard to stack them. You definitely had a lot of correlation with Mark Andrews, and then you had a little bit of correlation with Hollywood Brown. He was seeing an inconsistent role on and off, so I think maybe you could count on closer to like Andrews' level consistency this year if he's healthy. But the other guy who was surprisingly correlated with Lamar was Mark Ingram, who hit his ceiling in 36% of the games that Lamar did, and that was the highest of any mark on the Ravens. And so I mean, maybe an underutilized stack is actually just like the Ravens' onslaught in keeping Mark Ingram kind of in that mix to get the mop-up duty. So I thought that was one of the more interesting thoughts as far as if you were trying to find ways to get creative with Baltimore without loading up like a chalk Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, and you can also pair Mark Andrews with Lamar Jackson. My guess is that being $7,400 more expensive than Darren Waller, more expensive than Zach Ertz is going to keep Andrews a little bit relatively lower owned on FanDuel. My sense is that that Zach Ertz is going to be very popular on FanDuel. Mike Gesicki, 5,400, going to be pretty popular. I am kind of leaning towards some breakout week one guys, so I think that TJ Hawkinson at 5,300 is interesting to me. I'm waiting for some reports on Seattle tight ends, but I really like that Seattle at Atlanta game. I think that's probably one of the highest probability shootout games for week one. And, you know, if we get a good report on Greg Olsen or Will Dissly, those guys are definitely going to make it in some stacks for me. What we most want to learn from week one of the NFL season, I think there are a lot of different ways to go with this one. I think one of the most interesting for fantasy football, both for DFS and season long, is what the Indianapolis Colts plan to do with Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack, and Nyheim Hines. If Jonathan Taylor comes out week one, gets 18 carries, 4 targets, and Marlon Mack, you know, plays on 15% of the snaps or something, I'm gonna be pretty mad at myself for not just drafting Jonathan Taylor in the second round all year long, because you know that is certainly the recipe for a breakout. So that's a situation that I'm really looking forward to figuring out.
Yeah, that one's gonna be pretty challenging to figure out. I believe that they're on one of the showdown slates. The opening. Oh no, they're not. They're on the main slate. It's just a 1 p.m. showdown. I was trying to check out, but I think that's going to be an important one. It does sound like the coach speak is that Mac is still the starter, which I would expect at least early in the season. They'll still give him some work, even if Taylor looks better. But for me, the thing I want to know the most about is how the departure of Tom Brady to Tampa Bay and arrival of Cam Newton impact those two offenses specifically. With Brady, I think it's really important because the Bucs were one of the most valuable offenses to stack during the 2019 season. If he steps in and runs a high-powered correlated offense through Godwin and Evans, that's going to be extremely important for DFS. Whereas if he runs a more widely distributed offense like he ran in New England, and he's able to bring in OJ Howard for targets, Gronk for targets, Cam Bray for targets, running backs for targets, that's going to suck some of the fantasy value, not just out of Evans and Godwin, but out of the stacks there. So I'm really curious about the Brady impact. And then conversely, Cam coming into this Patriots offense, they already like to operate pretty run heavy. Are they going to use Cam in a heavy running role? Are they going to transition not quite into like a Baltimore style offense, but an offense that kind of can play that run heavy and kind of control the clock and play good defense? And how does that impact the rest of those receivers? So those, I think, are two of the most important questions, not just for week one profits and results, but kind of that would dictate what your strategy might be to attack teams weeks 2 through 5.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, actually, that's probably an even better question than mine. They were one of the most fantasy friendly offenses last year. And, you know, I'm not sure how optimistic I feel about them being fantasy friendly in 2020. Everyone, thank you very much for listening and watching the Daily Roto Hour on Sports Grid TV. This was our daily fantasy preview show. Went through a bunch of daily fantasy theory, went through a bunch of stacking explanation, and also a week one preview on FanDuel for daily fantasy. So thank you very much for listening and watching. We will see you back next week.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.